VCF SoCal 2026, The Art of Vintage Computing. My twin brother Jeff could not make it down to VCF SoCal 2026 this year, so I made this video to show him what it was all about. But hey, you're here now too, so why not watch it with him? Hey Jeff, I wish you could have been here. I've never gone to one of these things without you, but Pete and my son went, so it was cool. Here are my first thoughts before I went.
All right, we'll be going to VCF at SoCal today. It's the Sunday, the last day, second day, last day. This will be the first time Jeff isn't going because Jeff has other things to do, so it's just gonna be me. And we'll be checking out VCF SoCal. I hope it's good. It's out there at Hotel Farah in Orange, California. And we'll be on our way in a little bit. And hopefully I'll get some good video of all the cool things and I can show it to Jeff. So this is really for Jeff. So hey Jeff, I will be introducing you to VCF SoCal as a one-man band this time. So let's get going.
Atari t-shirt found, going in. Anyway, since you could not be here, Jeff, I decided to make this tour video for you. VCF SoCal was at Hotel Farah again in Orange. Parking was $12. First off, the free table. The free table had a lot of interesting stuff going into the 90s and beyond. I think next year I might bring a big box of my old crap. The one thing I need to warn you about, Jeff, is Atari. It was in short supply this year. Commodores are really starting to show their dominance as the mainstream goes vintage and retro. There were a few Ataris running games, including the only one running Ms. Pac-Man at Vintner's Ms. Pac-Man table. But like I said, lots of Commodore computers. Like lots. A whole booth dedicated to the Commodore 128, which I found is actually pretty cool. Plus many C64s, some VIC-20s running games, and even an Amiga 4000 with the video toaster, just to name a few. Even Jason Moore, Mr. Atari ST, had an Amiga running. But let's start here. The best thing about VCF is the weird and uncommon stuff. Take this display of the Hector, a machine with USA origins, but ended up in France. This guy was especially interesting talking about the Hector. I got him to talk a bit about where the machine came from.
It's interesting. When I was a kid, I saw those computers in France, and I saw those computers and were like, way too expensive for me to...
Where was this?
In France.
In France, okay. So yeah. Is this a French...
French computer, yeah.
French computer, cool.
It's not very well known even in France.
It's pretty neat, though. So it's not even well known in France?
No. It was...
What's your name, Matthew?
My name is Remy.
Hey, Remy.
So it was... it was pretty, even in France, it was pretty niche. But I mean, we sold quite a lot of those computers. But let me tell you the history because.
Yeah, tell me the history. Is it? So it's 8-bit. It's 8-bit machine from the.
8-bit. It's all from the 80s. We were originals. So I started in the US actually. This computer here is called the Interact from a company in Michigan. And they, I mean, that computer, which is super. Weird. I mean, it was kind of innovative, but also very badly designed, honestly.
Right. This is cassette based, right? So it's like
And so, if you got a keyboard, it's the weirdest thing. It's like I'm start with number two here, and number one is on the right.
Oh my god!
It's kind of a hack. The whole thing is kind of a hack.
But and this is an American made.
American. Michigan.
Uh huh. And then it made its way over to France.
No, well, kind of because. What happened is there's a company in France that acquired the rights for importing it in France.
Okay.
And then make the, because this only works in France, it's got NTSC.
Right, it's got the NTSC, it's the wrong power, everything, right? Everything's wrong.
But this company is, it's Micronic, they do electronics. And they said, hey, we can be part of that craze of computers, we can make the.
That's all. And what year is this?
That's 79.
79. Okay. Yeah. So yes, right in there, right?
And so we want to be doing French computers. And so.
So when you were a kid, did you know about this?
No, I had no idea this existed.
But you were in France at the time.
Yeah, but I thought they were in France.
Okay.
Because so what happened is this company, so they acquired the rights, right? And then this company in Michigan, they bankrupt, like a year later.
Right.
Yeah. And so we had like maybe a couple of thousand of those models. And so that's one of the originals, like number 227 or something.
So Pete was able to make it, Jeff, and he says, what's this book be?
This book is E-R-F-F. It's a great book if you're into 6502 assembly tidbits.
Hey, Jeff, maybe we should make sure 6502 is one of the fill-in-the-blanks challenges this year. Next came Jerry Ellsworth. She was there again too, Jeff. Remember last year when we were on the streamers panel with her? She's a legend. Anyway, she had a whole table of TI computers, plus her own funny pamphlets on technology. Here's one about quitting eBay, Jeff. 35 steps to freedom. The best thing about VCF this year was everyone was easy to talk to and also willing to talk. I think it was easier to strike up a conversation there alone than when we were there together. Weird, eh? Maybe together as twins we are too imposing? Next, we saw a table dedicated to learning Commodore 64 BASIC. Not for me, but I love the idea of people still learning BASIC.
This table is an introduction to C64 BASIC, and they have handouts, but I feel bad taking any of them. But I kind of want to. Like, I'm going to see. It's like this is a cool card. I kind of want to take it. I have nothing to put anything in there. We'll work that out.
There's also a fascinating display of tarot card programs for various computers and video game systems. Someone was really into it. There were some really cool 8-bit Atari products out of boot named Atari 8-Bits and ANSI Art. Art being the key word here, Jeff, because I have to tell you, the most interesting thing, Jeff, about VCF is starting to feel more like an electronic art museum than a technology show. I mean, it's still tech, but the art and beauty are starting to sneak in. Just take these Power Macs, for instance, a pretty incredible selection of early Power iMacs with curved lines. They are a thing of beauty. There was another guy, Bucket of Pixels, on Instagram. He was really into 2000 Macs. I talked to him about it.
Is it about this iMac, this era that interests you?
Oh, these are those pretty machines. Like, let me show you.
It's beautiful, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
They look real nice. Like, you can see the whole innards, like the guts of the CRT on there.
Oh my, yeah, it is. It's beautiful. It's beautiful and stuff.
And I've wanted this one since I was a kid. Since it's so sleek, and even 20 years after it's made, it still looks.
So the design is your. It is. It's beautiful. Now, what about today's computers? Is not this.
Oh well, they're at least for the Apple ones. They're all the gray boxes that haven't changed since 2009.
That's right.
And like, you know, they're very functional. I actually recommend them nowadays. It's just. When it comes to the aesthetic side, they've kind of fallen behind a little.
Yeah, no, they've fallen behind. No, I get it. So you're exhibiting the artistic value of the Mac in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay.
These three models were among the prettiest they've made.
And Bucket of Pixels is you?
That is my Instagram handle.
Oh, that's awesome.
So if you hop on there, you can find my page where I go into a lot more detail about these
machines.
That's
very cool.
I go and I talk about how I found them, how I built them to do cool stuff. Like, these two machines can tether together in like a peer-to-peer network and do like
multiplayer
battle.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
You can see the retro window really is moving forward, isn't it? Also, again, check out the glorious Amiga video toaster. What I would have done to have one of these when we made those crappy indie movies back in the late 80s with Atari ST titles. Next, I talked to this guy who built his own computer using TTL logic.
All right, so who are you?
Okay, my name is Bill Busby, and this is a computer I built 24 years ago. One of the interesting things about it is that it doesn't use a stock CPU, but the CPU itself was constructed out of 74 series TTL logic.
So it's a TTL logic?
So
you took a bunch of transistors and you made a CPU?
Pretty much, although I took 74 series logic, which is one step up.
Okay.
And it's fairly capable. It runs the Minix operating system. It's fully multi-user, multitasking, supports demand paging.
I'm going to take a look at this just so. So, but this is a one-off. This is one, you built this yourself.
I built this myself, but it's no longer a one-off. This is a clone of it.
Oh, this is you as well.
Yes, and this one is the same thing, but done using printed circuit boards. Because this was getting kind of old.
Right.
And so the boards were interchangeable.
So printed circuit boards, but how are you doing? So the logic is still in transistors on the circuit board?
It's in 74 series logic devices.
Okay.
One step up from.
Again, one step up than TTL logic,
yes,
right?
TTL logic. Yeah.
Okay.
And
exciting.
And it's been solid. It's been running for, again, more than 20 years. And when it's not here, it's connected to the internet, and it'll serve a web page. And you can even tell that into it and play around.
Do you have it, like, can people connect to it on the internet? All right, and how do they do that?
So grab this little card here.
Okay.
And that's the info.
That is fantastic.
You know, probably 10,000 people over the last two decades.
It can even play a version of Zork. If you are asking who needs to have their own computer designed just to play Zork, you are asking the wrong question. It's not need to have, it's need to build, do, need to touch, need to feel. I'd say that's pretty much everyone in 2026. It was an almost Zen-like experience, Jeff, coming on Sunday morning. Low volume, but high energy, with the exhibitors almost too excited about showing their devices. The crowd was light, but all exhibitors were fresh and ready to talk. Everyone was so exuberant and excited about what they were showing. The biggest change, Jeff, showcase booths in the exhibits were separated from consignment and vendors. I think you would really like that. Next, I talked to Thomas Terry Holmes, flying the flag for Fujinet. You remember Thomas, right, Jeff? You interviewed him for the podcast.
So this is Thomas. You know, so Jeff actually interviewed you for our podcast once. So Thomas Terry Holmes, Jeff, here. Give me an update on Fujinet for my brother who's not here about what's going on with Fujinet.
More platforms, more gooder.
More gooder. This is Atari 2600.
Yes, I have the Atari 2600 board in my bag. I didn't have a 2600 that I could bring here with me. So basically, I don't bring hardware anymore because of what happened with Spirit Airlines. They basically play a hacky sack with my freaking check.
Oh, man.
So I coordinate to get stuff
to get people to bring the stuff here. So tell me, I have an original Fujinet from, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. What do I need to do to get it back up to snuff for today, to run?
Go to Fujinet.online, download the Fujinet flasher, run the update.
Okay. That's it.
Now, the thing about it is, when we finalize a design for a particular platform, that's it. So for the Atari version, even though we do hardware updates to improve certain things, like maybe we add a diode, maybe we add some things, but those are things to improve hardware coupling. But the functionality doesn't change at all. And all the firmware for every version of Atari will still work on every version of the Atari Fujinet from now until forever.
So we can build a multiplayer game for Fujinet, right? If we wanted to.
Yes.
We could run it in, could we do it in BASIC or we need to do it? Okay.
Yes.
So if we decided this year that we wanted to write a multiplayer game and play it on Fujinet, that'd be something we could do. Because we're trying to take 2026 and do all the things we haven't done before. So one of them is right now we're doing one about making music with the Pokey and but if we wanted to this year, if we decided, hey, we can write a BASIC program, run it on Fujinet, then play a multiplayer game together, that's a totally possible thing to do. Awesome.
Yes.
You want people to do that?
Yes, I want people to do
that. Okay, so it sounds to me like it's something we should do.
Yes, we do.
Awesome.
Now, as far as that's concerned, what I have is, I have the user's guide that I've been putting together.
Uh-huh.
You can already get a draft of it, but I'm still adding things to it. But one of the things that's in that user manual is I go through the different languages that are available on the Atari 8-bit, for example, and I write 3 example programs.
Okay.
And basically, for each one, I implement it in each of those languages. So you see it as a Rosetta Stone, so how to implement.
How to implement it, okay.
Yes.
Hey, maybe we should make a multiplayer game for Fujinet and make that one of our fill-in-the-blanks podcasts. Next, I saw Steve the Vint Nerd. He's been on a health kick and was almost unrecognizable. He looked great and was running around the place like a king, but a good, honorable king, because he's also a top dude. The vendors had their own small room, and it was interesting, but not much Atari stuff that I could find. Here's a short tour of the room. There was something very special about the vendors being separated from the exhibitors. It meant you could lower your defenses in the big exhibitor room, as you knew no one was selling you anything. Well, not for money anyway. They wanted to buy your attention, your thoughts, your ear. That was money I was willing to spend. It made it easier to talk and easier to listen. What a brilliant move by the VCF team, Steve and Mickey. Maker Faire Orange County was there too, and they were trying to bring Maker Faire back in full force. I'd love to see them embrace homebrew hardware and software more. There was another Mac playing Time Pilot, homebrew, I think. Time Pilot is like one of my top five Golden Age arcade games. Lots of Macs here again. Just goes to show you that the aesthetics of this hobby are starting to matter. Jason Moore had a table of 68,000 base computers, including a 1040 SDF he converted to HDMI. I talked to him about what was there.
Hey. So what are you doing, Jason Moore?
I am showcasing computers that featured the 68,000 CPU from Motorola. So I've got some Macs, an Atari ST, and two Amigas.
Well, we all know what the best one is.
Of course. You're looking at it.
Yeah, the 1040... stock 1040 STF or ST?
This is an STF, and actually to get it to display on HDMI, I had to do a mod to it. I had to install some components in the RF circuitry as part of the board to get it to play nice with the SCART cable to HDMI.
Oh, yeah.
The STF is missing those components for some reason. But
What do you think that reason is?
Save money. All these computers have stories about cutting costs.
That's right. Well, this is cool. Has it been good this weekend?
Oh, very busy. Yeah, yesterday was incredibly busy. Today's getting busier. It's been a good show. Yeah, a lot of interest in the Atari, actually. A lot of people have sat down and used it and reminisced about their time with it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is getting better and better each year.
Yeah, Steve and Mickey do a great job.
But you enjoy being here?
I love it. This is my third year participating, and what I love about this show is just how happy everybody is. It's a really happy place.
So excited to show their thing, right?
People are happy to showcase their stuff. People are happy to see it and use it, and yeah, it's just a fun, happy place.
Yeah, it's really neat. Anyway, thanks, man.
And just look at that Atari STF, Jeff. Was there ever a more beautiful computer case? The Atari XL line is close, but the ST is a complete thing of beauty.
Look, it's Jeff, it's a table of basic books. How many of these do you notice that we either owned or own? I see at least two, basically two. I see two. Oh, I have this too, Endless Loop.
There was also a guy here with the very first Nintendo console, a Pong unit. Pretty cool. Yes, video games are computers. The Game Tank is a new 8-bit system that is open source, but currently crowdfunding. It has its own cartridges too, but look at it. It's a pure 80s design. It's physical in every way. You can even burn your own ROM carts. I talked at length to the guy who made it.
Okay, so this is like an open source project,
open
right?
Source, yep.
But does anyone actually sell the devices that people don't want to 3D print them themselves?
So I am working on a crowd supply campaign to make a whole bunch at once at a contract manufacturer and sell that, which is going to definitely come out cheaper than the one-off builds people do by themselves. And that's currently in progress. It ends like February 26th. We're like over 80% of the way there.
Wait. Over 80%. Is that how can... Where's the... Oh, is it on the QR code over there?
The big QR code there, and okay. Where the QR code on the car is at.
And what about the cartridges?
The cartridges are 2 megabytes of flash. That's my second generation cartridge after my 8 kilobyte EEPROM. And the cartridges can be filled with this...
Right, with the burner, but it's really now a flasher, right?
Yeah, the flasher.
That's
and
awesome.
Essentially the interface, you know, from the computer to your... And yes. It'll program them.
Okay, and then how much do you think the cartridges are going to be a piece?
So in like small quantity, there's going to be it's going to be a different math for people that want to distribute games on cartridge and get them in bulk themselves. But the way that I'm selling the cartridges now is packs of two for 40.
Okay, so $20 a piece.
Yeah,
that's cool. Game changer.
And the console comes with one on the crowd supply.
And you can flash. Oh no, but you need the flasher.
It comes with the flasher.
Oh, it does come with the flasher too.
So it comes. So the crowd supply bundle is what I call a developer kit. It's the console, controller, blank cartridge, flasher, and a pack-in game, which is this one, a Curse of Fiend.
And how much is it? How much is that?
$300.
Okay, cool.
And I'm aiming for a July delivery.
That's fantastic. Okay, great. That's awesome.
There was also a woman who had an incredible collection of portable computers, especially this one, built like a tank, called the Grid, which is also quite possibly the first portable computer ever made. The military used it in battle in the 1980s. You remember those lasers Dad worked on at Hughes to guide missiles? This is probably used with one of those in the field. Even though it was built for warfare, that doesn't mean someone didn't make a Pac-Man clone for it. Taking a thing of war and making a thing of play, Jeff, to me, that's art right there. That's contrast. That's transformation. That's what this is all about. And there was still more stuff. These vector computers were just like the ones Mr. Scott had in our high school computer lab, and a display of how the Yamaha sound chip was used over the years, and more Apple machines playing more games. This inspired me to have some thoughts about what was at this show.
One thing you'll notice, Jeff, as you look around is Commodore is everywhere. Big Commodore's big. Commodore's big. Atari, not so much. There's a little bit. We're going to see Jason Moore in a little bit. He's got Atari over there, but Commodore, if you're a Commodore fan, like, look at this over here. Even have someone's got Computes Gazette, and they've got the Commodore 64 Ultimate, but you know, but it's mostly Commodore fan if you got it.
But what about Atari, Jeff? You need to know. Consignment is where the Ataris were. Loss of 1050s, XEGSs, 1200 XLs. Looking at the beauty of these machines on display, it's not hard to imagine a world where they came from, where we came from. A digital yet physical world where a feeling of comfort and calm comes from seeing these machines in action. Machines that were once merely functional now feel like works of art in 2026 because they were transformative in their own time. My son mentioned a very interesting conclusion he arrived at, that software is important because it's a way to experience vintage computers and the physicality of them. And as the world gets more digital, the rejection of it is coming at an even faster clip. And that was the art of the Vintage Computer Festival 2026, Jeff. I can't wait to show you 2027 in person.